Hello and welcome to the Monday edition of the Fox Football Podcast, following on for a bumper weekend of football. It was fantastic. It started on, it was Friday night this week, wasn't Thursday? It was Friday night this week. It included the W League Grand Final and ended wonderfully well at Leichhardt Oval on Sunday with Sydney and Central Coast. And here to go through it all with me is Chief Football Commentator at Fox Sports, Simon Hill, and Socceroos legend, and one of our pundits here at Fox Sports in Ned Zelich. Hello, gentlemen.
Good to see you, Garby. Ned.
G'day, Simon. Garby.
Hello, Ned. Nice to have you on the podcast for the first
time this season.
Yeah.
Good to be on it.
You're looking typically relaxed, leant back, had a sip of water. He's got a mountain of notes in front of him, though. He's come well prepared for the pod.
These are notes, but real. What they are is I'm doing the A-League Hour.
So we're just a byproduct.
So I'm just going to sit here and chat to you guys and prepare for that as well at the same time.
Well, hopefully we give you a nice precursor to the A-League Hour with some, you know, in-depth football chat as people are craving. How have you been otherwise, mate? Because you've been all around the show. You've been back for a little while, but obviously you had a period of time in Europe.
Good.
Now you're back in Oz.
Yeah, good. Just floating around. It was a tough month, January, with all the stuff, Asian Cup and doing the A-League as well. Simon would know because he wasn't here. So
everybody thinks I've been on holiday for a month.
It's been good. It's good to be busy and have your mind occupied with football.
Exactly right. The best thing to be occupied by. And the W League Grand Final had us occupied first and foremost across the weekend, Saturday afternoon. Sydney FC, congratulations. Champions are making up from their mishap in the grand final last season. Sam Kerr and Rachel Hill and the rest of the Perth Glory side have to settle for bridesmaids in this instance, although the men are taking all before them. But a wonderful effort by Sydney FC in a hugely exciting game.
Yeah, it was. I think it was the grand final that the women's game needed, let's be honest, after what's gone on over the last two or three weeks. Some fantastic goals. Great crowd, over 6,000. Pity about the playing surface, which wasn't the best. Let's be honest, we sort of get used to that, don't we? Men's or women's football in this country. But I think overall it was a great spectacle. And maybe from Perth's point of view, it was just that one game too far after they put so much into the previous week. But that's to take nothing away from Sydney FC. I thought McCaskill was outstanding. Mm. What a performance by her. She had her parents in the stand as well, apparently, watching. And the only other interesting thing for me about the whole day, and I know you tweeted about this, Garby, at the end, not a single FFA person up on the podium to present either the medals or the trophy. Now, I know you said that, this is a shift in policy and that they're going to get legends of the game up in future from now on. Mm. We had Thea Slatcher and Cheryl Salisbury up there along with one of the sponsors.
Yeah.
It just looked to me, and I'm sure to a lot of other people, the timing of it, you just thought, are you sure about that?
I never said I believed it. I just reported
that's what
I
you
was
were told.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course there is skepticism there because the timing is odd. But the drums had been beating on this for a while. They may have said the new board, for all we know, months ago when they came in, enough of that. One of us can go
in
up there.
In which case, good on them, because it doesn't need to happen.
I think it's fine to have one FFA executive and one sponsor up there, but then get the greats up there, get the Ned Zeliches and the rest.
Absolutely.
On A-League Grand Final Day and the Matildas greats on W-League Grand Final Day.
With one condition, Garby, with one condition. They have to be football people. If you remember at the W-League A-League Awards, the Warren Dolan Medal, we had Anna Mears up presenting the Dolan Medal, which, to be fair, alongside Julie Dolan.
Yes.
But I remember sitting there thinking, what the... would cycling do that with us? Would they invite Ned Zelich up to present?
Of course
their
medal?
They would. I don't know. Maybe you're very big in the cycling world. I don't know, Ned.
Have you cycled from Canberra to Sydney before, Ned?
No, not yet, mate.
But, look, I get your point, but it's great that it's moving forward in that way. Definitely the scepticism around the timing of this one, because let's be honest, if David Gallop or Chris Nicu had gone up there, the boos would have been heard all around Jubilee Stadium. But,
the individual performance as well. I mean, Simon mentioned McCaskill. What a player. You know, 22 years old, involved in all four goals. And Legazo, Cracker, Huerta as well. Some great goals on the day. But I just watching the game, it was such a dominant performance, wasn't it, from Sydney? They played the far more intelligent football and never, I mean, even when Perth got back into it, after their penalty. And I just never had the feeling that Sydney could lose that game. They were just so good on the day.
Two performances stood out for me. Alana Kennedy at the back to negate the influence of Rachel Hill and Sam Kerr as a combination. You can see why she's so important for the Matilda. She was fantastic. I thought Chloe Legazzo had a really important game. A lot of people who follow the Matildas closely in the W League say that she's been underwhelming this season and that she's in the Matildas every time they play, but there should be more question marks about her position. I thought on grand final day she really stood up, copped an injury late, but she ticked everything over and then scored a fantastic fourth goal, which ultimately sealed the contest. I think it's a really big performance from her going into the Cup of Nations and then the World Cup.
Mm. And, I mean, if you look at the goals that they scored as well, the first two goals, they were great goals, but just the lead-up play was fantastic as well. I mean, the last two was basically they pounced on errors from Perth, but I thought on the day it was a really good mix and great work. Ante Juric did a fantastic job with his team.
Ante Juric, the W League champion. It looks like Ante Milicic will get the job as Matilda's coach. That seems like it'll be ratified.
One of the major networks thought that was the other way around.
They thought they were the same person, pretty much, which is, yes, anyway.
So it's been a good start for Milicic.
We all make mistakes.
Winning the grand final.
We all make mistakes in the media, but the less said about that, better.
Sorry, Garby, to interrupt. Do you know, on a serious note, though, this is just on the back of that, I saw a quote today, and we're going to talk about Ante Milicic and the Matildas. I saw a quote today from Chloe Legazzo, who actually said, I don't know whether she was joking or not. I don't know what he looks like. And, you know, that speaks volumes, really, to the continuing lack of cut-through that we have as a sport in this country. Now, Ante Milicic, all right, he was not Mark Viduka or even a Ned Zelic, dare I say, as a player. But he was a very good player. He played for many, many years in the old NSL, plus in the A-League. He was a Socceroo. He played in Europe. And, you know, one of the female players doesn't know what he looks like. Mm. That's a worry for me. We're still not getting any of our football culture or history through, even to people who are involved at the top level in our own game.
Yeah, he's been with the Socceroos for how long?
Wouldn't you expect a female footballer to know who Milicic is?
Yeah, but that might be more on Chloe. Like, you don't have to watch the Socceroos a couple of times over the last 6 years to know who Ante Milicic is. Like, most football people would know. So I mean,
you saw him on the bench at the Asian Cup. I mean, you know, jumping on top of Postecoglou and all the rest. You've got to know who the guy is.
It's a worry, isn't it?
I think she should know who he is, though. Someone involved in the game. Anyway, she's going to know soon because it's likely he's going to be the coach taking them to the World Cup. What do we make of this appointment? A massive one at a highly controversial, to say the absolute least, Ned, time in the women's game.
We still have to wait for the official announcement. But and there's been a few names that have been thrown into the hat. I just sort of thought with the Milicic option that it would have been a prerequisite, really, for someone to get the job, like the top job in women's football, to actually be involved in women's football. I mean, that's my opinion on
it. It's a fair
point. So, a surprising move. Clearly must have other factors involved, maybe financial situation. I mean, Milicic, I believe, is still employed by the FFA. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, what else is there, really, that speaks for Milicic getting this job?
I mean, he's been ready for a big job for a while. He's been assistant coach of the Socceroos, gone to two World Cups, so he's ready for a big job. This is a big job.
But the point you make
about not being involved in the women's game is a more than adequate one.
Look, I think it's an appointment, with the greatest respect to Ante, who I think is a fine coach, of expediency. And the reason why I say that is that it's an interim, or this is what we're led to believe. It'll be confirmed probably by the time you listen to this podcast. It's an interim appointment till the end of the Women's World Cup. He is employed already by the FFA. I think they're obviously financially, they're pretty strapped, so we'll save on a wage on a very basic level. They might have to give him an increase slightly, but he's already involved in the system. He knows how the FFA operates. I certainly take on board Ned's point about the fact that he doesn't have any experience with the women's game, which is a problem. But, you know, maybe at the moment, that's what's required. Mm. Somebody from outside who's not involved in all that, because there is such a stench around all this at the moment.
Yeah.
Maybe they feel as though he's the best short-term solution, get to the Women's World Cup. And let's be honest, you know, Ante has the chance to make himself a national legend because for all the, you know, the stuff swirling around the Matildas at the moment, they're still a very good side. They've still got a possibility that they could win this World Cup. So he could, you know, be parachuted into this job. And in 6 months' time, you know, he could be historic for being the first person to win a World Cup for Australia as a coach. So I think there's an incentive there for Ante as well. I think it sort of makes logical sense for the FFA to make that appointment. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who don't like it. Should there be a female coach? Maybe that will come after the Women's World Cup. But in the interim, I think it's probably one of expediency, and it's one that suits all parties concerned.
But there are rumours flying around as well that he's not 100% for it.
I think he's had to be convinced.
Yeah. So basically what, twisting his arm to do it? Is that what it is, the situation?
Possibly.
I mean, the thing is, I always thought Ante was waiting for an opportunity to basically get into an A-League club and coaching.
He's been linked with the Southwest Sydney job, hasn't he?
Yeah. But then, so that's why I was really surprised to hear that his name is linked to this job and now he's front runner.
I mean, it's only five months. He won't be doing it long term. He'll do it for the World Cup. And yeah, maybe his arm has had to be twisted a bit, but that doesn't mean that he won't be committed and passionate and dedicated to the cause, because he's a professional and he's been around this environment, World Cups, the World Cup environment, on a couple of occasions with the Socceroos. He knows what's required. It's going to be a very challenging job stepping into that dressing room now, after everything that's gone on. And because even though the players have all supported Alan Stajic, there is something in it without a shadow of a doubt that some were against him and had issues, because there wouldn't have been this whole kerfuffle without something there. So there's the possibility of some sort of divide in the playing group, and he's got to bring them all together and galvanise them.
Didn't the majority support Stajic? Then you've got coaches coming out as well in support of him. I mean, Juric came out, Heather Garriott came out and supported him. So the majority have come out and supported him.
But just because, put yourself in a player's shoes, right, in that squad, if 15 of the players have come out and supported the coach, if you don't support, you're isolated as someone who's against him and who started this whole thing. So, you know, you're going to have to get on the front foot and show support on social media or whatnot, so you don't look like someone who instigated all of this. There's a bit more to it, I think, than simply everyone being behind the coach. And he's got to deal with that now, Ante Milicic, a potential divide.
Well, let's just put Stajic to one side for a moment, because he's not coming back into the job. So if it is going to be Milicic, and we expect it, or everybody expects it's going to be, there's been a lot of talk, particularly from the women's football fraternity over the last couple of years. It's not men's football, it's not women's football, it's just football. So if it is just football, Ante Milicic is dealing essentially with just footballers. If he's a good enough coach, he'll get the best out of them and hopefully lead them a long way in the Women's World Cup. So, what we all have to do is to put the Stajic situation aside once the actual Cup of Nations starts, which is on the 28th of February, and then the lead up to the Women's World Cup. And hopefully the Matildas have the best possible chance of going as far as they possibly can in that tournament. And Milicic, whether he's male, female, whether he's aligned to the other coaches or the players or not, his job, same as every other coach, and let's be honest, Ned, you know this, you've been in situations at club level, I'm sure, where coaches have been sacked, maybe sometimes controversially, or they've left the club. A new coach comes in and, you know, you're not quite sure about it. If you get the results, people very quickly forget about that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
I don't think they'll forget about Stajic, because I want answers on that.
But correct.
Yeah, you're right. Men or women, it makes no difference. There's a dressing room there where there could be some issues, and he's got to bring them all together in a short space of time. That's his challenge, which is going to be a difficult one under enormous pressure and with the spotlight on the team now because of everything that's transpired. He's got big calls to make on players. Lisa Devanna could be the big one. She hasn't started many games in the back half of the season at all, hasn't scored much at all. I think the feeling out there is if Stajic was coach, she would go, because she's been a big part of his program. Ante Milicic all of a sudden comes in with a different lens on the whole situation, and he might choose to leave her out. I mean, there's big calls that can be made now because of the changing coach, which will be interesting.
I know Ante. I wouldn't say I know him, you know, as a close personal friend, but I know him reasonably well in a professional sense. Spent a fair bit of time with him. I don't think he'll shirk from those decisions. I think he's probably at the stage of his career where he's ready to be the main man. you know, and obviously he's been based overseas for a large part of the last few years as well in Croatia. So he's a little bit divorced from, you know, what's been going on back here. Let's be honest, you know, in Australia, particularly in football in Australia, we do live in a bit of a bubble here. So sometimes it's better to have that outside perspective. And I think he'll bring that. And also, because he's only an interim coach, I don't think he's going to take any crap. You know, because he doesn't need this.
No.
It's basically, it's all on the FFA. It's their decision. If Milicic, as we're led to believe, has had to have his arm twisted a little bit, he's going to be going, look, well, okay, I'll do it, but this is my way or the highway.
Yeah.
So I think it might be a good thing. I think he might be the person to, you know, to galvanise this squad. But, of course, the proof will be in the pudding, mate.
Exactly. And because he's going to come in with that perspective, yeah, big decisions will be made and big names might be left out, which will be a big talking point.
That's football, isn't it?
Exactly right. Sydney FC, W League champions, Perth Glory runners-up, but they are marching forward at a rate of knots in the A-League.
There they were on the attack. Scott Neville unselfishly. Beautiful back heel by Castro. Combination again. Keogh making a run. Davidson. Castro! It's four! And Diego Castro with a delightful setup. And it's 4-0.
The Glory looking untouchable. 9 points clear at the top. Brisbane, we should touch on them as well. An absolute rabble at the moment. They seem directionless, Ned Zelic, towards the end of this season.
Really surprising performance against Perth, because I thought Brisbane were excellent against Sydney and pretty much showed as well that you can play good football, but you have to have players in there who are prepared to hunt the ball down to provide that platform. And that was completely missing against Perth. I mean, if you saw the game, you would have seen a lot of Brisbane players just standing around in positions and just not prepared to actually put Perth players under pressure where they're coughing up possession. And that was the issue. And then all of a sudden you've got guys like Economides, Castro, getting on the ball, having space and time. Economides wriggling his way.
He's wonderful, isn't he?
You know, past three, four players. And that was really good to watch. And certainly, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Economides. I believe he signed a 3-year contract at Perth.
Yep.
I mean, you know, this guy, what he's showing, he really should be overseas. Is that fair to say? He should be overseas somewhere.
He's fantastic.
And he's had opportunities overseas, but it just hasn't worked out. And he's come back here and showed his potential. And now I think he has some big decisions to make, because really it comes down to, I mean, sure, every player wants to go overseas, but you have to make the right decision as well. Which league do I go to? Which club do I go to? Where am I going to have the opportunity to play and show my potential? And he certainly is doing that here.
I'm pleased you added that sort of little rider at the end there, because I think, you know, all too often players in the A-League, they have a good spell, which certainly Economides has had. He's had a great season so far, but it's only, what, three quarters of a season, and all of a sudden, bang, they're off to Europe again, or they're off to Asia to earn a bit more money. Adam Taggart being the classic case in point, you know, 11 goals. He's only been at Brisbane for, what, 5 minutes, and he's gone. I'd like to see players stay here a bit longer and really establish themselves in the A-League for two seasons and be ready to go. I go back to a conversation I had with an A-League coach. I won't say who it was, but he said to me, a lot of these players, they play three or four good games in this league and, you know, they're knocking on the door going, right, I've got interest from overseas, I want to go. And he said, you know, they should be at a point where I'm knocking on their door and saying, listen, I can't do any more for you and this league can't do any more for you, so it's time for you to leave. But at the moment, I think maybe agents are a big part of this as well. But they, you know, they're going too quickly, in my opinion. And the proof of that fact is that most of them, within 12 months, they're back in the A-League again. They use it as a rebound board, don't they? So just go here, there, and everywhere. And then they're back, and the A-League gives them, you know, a good wage and another opportunity to reestablish themselves. And I'd like to see Chris stay here for another season at least, because I think that would really sort of cement his career. He's only played 50-odd league games.
He's 23.
Chris is 23. Yeah. So, and he's had...
Exactly. So if you're 23 and you've only played 50 league games, do you want to take that chance again of going to Europe and sitting on a bench or being in the reserves?
Yeah.
Why not stay here, dominate the league, play every week, get those minutes in your legs, and then when you're ready, you go.
There's a good chance.
Do you think that or not? Am I being too harsh?
Yeah, but I mean, economy, this is a different situation, isn't it? You can talk about other players. Like, so you would have expected Arzani to stay a further
Absolutely.
Season here?
Yeah.
Especially after he showed at the World Cup as well. I mean, for me, it was clear that he's leaving. And then you got other guys, Theo Harris, who left to go to... I mean, can you knock back an offer from Borussia Mönchengladbach? That's a thing. Sebastian Pasquale off to Ajax. Yeah.
Have they played?
Can you knock that back?
Have they played?
They're playing... So Pasquale, I believe, is playing in the youth team. Yeah, and Theo Harris is in the second team, Gladbach. So, I mean, there's a long way to go, but I can understand guys leaving when they get those opportunities.
Chris Economides might have that option at the end of the season. Hopefully he stays. He loves it in Perth. To be honest, it could be interesting, four or five Perth Glory players, because they've had such a wonderful campaign. They were brilliant against Brisbane on Saturday night. As bad as Brisbane were, Perth put them to the sword, and that's where the focus should be for now. Some of the football they played was just magnificent. Their third goal started with Liam Reddy at the back, rolling it to his centre-back. In 12 passes, they were up the field, and Andy Keogh was tapping it in on the goal line of the other net. He might have been offside, but, you know, it was such a beautiful goal. You can forgive the linesman and the VAR official for being distracted and just paying it, because Perth were going to win anyway. And it only took 12 passes because Economides beat four blokes on his own and Castro beat four blokes on his own. I mean, they were absolutely fantastic. So, you know, this team at the moment, the victory maybe has the individuals to match them, but as a unit, as an actual team, I don't think anyone's getting close.
No, they've got great balance.
Mark Bosnich sticks his face on the window here in the podcast room and distracts us for a moment.
A Keogh finisher. You got Castro creativity. You got Kilkenny as well. I mean, he's been playing fantastically well, hasn't he, this season? And providing that distribution from deep too.
Well, I reckon the Glory have got four, possibly five locks for the team of the season. They could have half the team of the season on their own. Shane Lowry, a lock at centre-back. Jason Davidson. Absolute lock at left back. Best left back in the A-League this season without a shadow of a doubt. For someone who got knocked a bit when he played for the Socceroos, gee, he's responded well and he's playing well. Neil Kilkenny, lock in central midfield. Economides, a lock, that's four. And maybe Castro gets in the first 11 as well. So you've got potentially five players in the team of the season.
So let's give Tony Popovic a big rap here, because I think he's almost sort of set the template for a lot of A-League coaches. Did his transfer business very early. Had the vast majority of his squad on the training pitch probably as early as, I don't know, early June, whenever it was that they came back for pre-season training. He insisted that Castro came back. I mean, they say it was mutually agreed that he was going to come back early. If you remember in previous seasons, Castro didn't appear back in Australia until late August at the earliest, early September. Normally, he didn't get going until December, probably as a result of that. This time he has got everybody on the same page. I think the structure they play, that back three, is absolutely perfect for the personnel they've got. And he's got players such as Davidson, who you've mentioned, Economides, Ivan Franic is another one. I know he came off rather unwell at the weekend. Players that have been in the Socceroos, Sporanovic is another one, but he wants to inspire them to go again to get that Socceroos spot back. He said to me pre-season, these are guys that don't want to sit watching the Socceroos on television. They want their spot back. Mm. So he's instilled that hunger in them. Economides has already ticked that box. He's back in the squad. You know, maybe it will happen for some of the others as well. So I think he's done an absolutely sensational job. And the depth of his squad, so he's been able to rotate a lot of his team, you know, at various times when they've had a busy period of matches. Mm. And all the players that have come in, the likes of Fabio Ferreira, Joel Chiesa, Brendan Santelab at times, Alex Grant in the defence and Jake Brimmer in midfield, they've all been able to do a job. And look at the best example of this, Scott Neville. So Franic at the weekend has to come off. Scott Neville's first touch, brilliant assist, Andy Keogh goal.
And then he runs to the bench to celebrate, which is another great sign because he's barely played all season. This is a guy who was a regular for Western Sydney and for Perth before. You can understand if he was a bit annoyed, he hasn't played. He's running straight to the coach to celebrate. Mm. No ill feeling whatsoever. So they're together as a unit. Sporanovic, I mean, the fourth goal in the weekend, he brings it down from a 50-50 challenge. Controls it on his chest, brings it down, starts the play and they score. I mean, he's just the Rolls Royce when he's up and going.
But do you think teams have been making it too easy for him as well? I mean, do you think there's teams out there that are thinking like we are here and just turn up on the day, and it's like we've got no chance. I mean, you can't turn up and play
the victory
game
made
like,
them. The victory
like
made them
Brisbane
work in that second half
on the weekend. I mean, the thing is, you know, if you've got an opposition coach like Davies after the game rocking up in the press conference and say, "Oh, they're a good side," we know that. We know they're a good side. It's up to you to develop a strategy to make it hard for them. Not just you, but all the other coaches as well.
Yeah. Well, that's the question I want to ask about Brisbane. I mean, I saw you tweet on the weekend, literally they went for the flight and the frequent flyer points and the nice hotel. What was the point of that trip for Brisbane? Okay, they got some experience into some youngsters. It seemed like a pointless exercise. Where are they heading? The future of the football club's fine. They've got the training set up now and all the rest. But for the rest of the season, what is their actual plan?
Avoid the spoon.
That's it. And they play the Mariners. Yeah. Avoid the spoon. I mean, that was just a classic example of players passing on responsibility, the game against Perth, and just completely different to what I saw against Sydney. That was a major shock. Mm. The fact that, you know, you've shown what you have to do to win games, and now you've turned up there. And it's just, I mean, just go back and watch that first goal. Franjic and Economides are playing, they're playing 10-metre passes, you know, and there's no one there to basically put him under pressure, you know. Matty Mackay's there, but he's not trying to win a challenge. You've got Tongik out of position. You've got Negro as well. No one's trying to actually get in there and win the ball, you know.
Body language was poor, I think, at the weekend. But, you know, let's be honest. The club at the moment is in a bit of a mess. Not for the first time over the last few years, but it's in a real funk at the moment, isn't it? It needs to be resolved. They need to get a coach in, full-time coach. It's obviously not going to be Darren Davis. He's already said he's not going to be involved. So whoever it is, you know, needs to be in place, I think, as soon as possible, probably even before the end of the season, so he can start planning for next year. If you remember the last big reinvention of Brisbane in 2010, they brought Postecoglou in halfway through the season. And that first half of the season was terrible. They couldn't win a game. And everybody said, oh, Postecoglou's useless. But he was putting in place his plans for the following season. And then we all know what happened from there on in. So
that's what I mean.
The sooner they made that decision. I mean, when did John go? December, was it?
Yeah.
So that's nearly 2 months ago.
That's what I mean. It just feels like they're limping towards the end of the season. They've written it off, and whatever happens, like, I don't know. It's a bit deflating for the raw faith.
Of course.
That this is the way they've gone about it. Wonderful crowd in Perth, looked like more than 10,500. The shed was sold out, which is a great sign. So they're building beautifully crowd-wise towards the end of the season, as they should.
What was the crowd figure?
Just 10,500.
It seemed like a lot more, didn't it?
It did. Yeah. It felt like 12, 13 at least, but who knows, maybe the counting was wrong on a rare occasion in the negative in the A-League. Great crowd at Leichhardt Oval yesterday. Sydney FC missed the chance to move into second spot, though, which means the Glory have pretty much got the Premier's plate wrapped up, let's be honest. But what an afternoon of football it was. Not the greatest game, but the atmosphere and the vibe around the place was truly wonderful.
Well,
boutique stadiums, yes, we know all of that.
You and
it's
I,
great.
Well, I am going to repeat that because it's something that needs to be repeated.
Yeah.
For me, this experiment for Sydney, not experiment, they had no choice in it, but in contrast to the Wanderers, it's been fantastic for them going around the city at these properly sized venues. Now, for me, the football fans have spoken. They like these venues, smaller, more compact, so you can get a proper football atmosphere. Why on earth are they going back to Allianz with a 40, 50,000? Because if they got the same crowd at Allianz that they had on Sunday, which was a tick over 12,000, that would be lost.
Completely.
And the whole feel of the game is completely different. And you're right, it wasn't a particularly great contest in terms of the quality. But it felt like a proper football game because the fans were close in, there was a good noise. I think the players respond to that as well. So for me, if I was David Tractivenko, I'd be speaking to Leichhardt Council or Kogarah Council and saying, what can we do to make this, our permanent home ground? It's an absolute no-brainer for me. Do you agree?
Is that locked in? They're going back to Allianz?
They've signed a 10-year lease.
Right.
But 2 years of the lease, I'm told, will expire during the remodeling of the stadium. So I think they'll have 2, maybe 3 years left on their lease when they go back. So there's room to move after that potentially.
Okay. But they definitely have to go back.
They have to go back because they've signed a lease.
Right.
They don't have the money to break that lease or anything like that. So, yeah, they will be going back. But You know, they should be looking at potentially after that taking up one of these options. I agree. And then play your derbies and your finals at Allianz when you need the yes. bigger venue. Mm. But you play at Cogra or Leichhardt Oval week in, week out. Look, the weather was fantastic. When it rains, it might be a different story. There's no cover
at all. It would need redevelopment.
Of course.
Of course it would.
It was just a fantastic day. And the crowd was 12,000. I understand they think it was a lot more. Apparently some of the electronic counters actually broke. And it might have been around 15. That seems more likely. But yeah, the golden rule if you're throwing a party, Ned, firstly is have enough alcohol. Secondly, make sure the room is not too big for the amount of people that are going. And that's what Allianz Stadium can be sometimes and many other venues. That was perfect.
What is it, Leichhardt, 20,000 capacity, is that right?
Just shy of that. Just,
I think, about 18, I think.
The perfect arena for Sydney FC, isn't it really? Yeah, so
I know that there are issues with parking and with transport. So you know, they would be issues.
They still got there though. In the end, didn't they?
Exactly.
Yeah. But Allianz is not easy to get to.
No.
So Central Coast though showed some fight. Decent signs. That boy Sam Graham at the back. I know there's controversy over teams bringing in young players from overseas, and those are valid. But at least they can play. I thought he was excellent against Sydney FC. One of the standouts.
Look, there were some positive signs there, but it's tough, isn't it? I mean, talking about a team that are just so far away at the bottom of the table. But I think there have been a lot of games, though, this season where it could have gone, things could have gone the other way. And this was just one of those games where, again, they did drop deep and all of us were expecting Sydney to finally get the breakthrough. But I don't know what you guys thought about that penalty. I thought it was a joke.
Soft.
Really.
Very soft.
Really. I mean, are we going to, you know, get referees that are actually able to have a look at these situations and say, okay, there was a bit of contact there, but it's just not enough for a player to go down. That's how referees should analyse these situations in the box. But I just get the feeling these days, just the slightest bit of contact, it's all over, penalty.
Ned, I think it's time you did your refereeing course. I want to see you, the man in black, on a Sunday with the whistle.
You won't be seeing that.
You can't bring individual brilliance.
I can't do the running anymore.
You can't bring individual brilliance into refereeing. It's not what it's about. It's meant to be, you're not meant to have the flashes of brilliance. You're meant to be consistent. I'm not sure Zelich fits the mold.
I would love to flash a few red cards.
In all seriousness, why don't more ex-players go and referee?
Or why don't referees get more ex-players in to basically, you know, let's analyse footballing situations together in front of the big screen, you know?
Do they not do that?
I believe Bozza was in there once, went to Canberra. I don't know what it was. I think it was probably part of a coaching course or refereeing course held some discussions with him. But I reckon they should really talk to ex-players a lot more, you know? Guys that have been in those situations and know the tricks involved as well with players trying to get penalties and free kicks and all the rest.
But then aren't you second guessing yourself? If you're putting the thought in a referee's mind that maybe 5 or 6 times out of 10 a player is actually going to throw himself down inside the box, you're then putting that thought in the referee's head, and that when there is a genuine foul, perhaps genuine contact that is deserving of a penalty, then the referee's going, oh, I'm not going to give it because I reckon he's died. The problem is that the laws of the game are not straightforward, are they? They leave a lot open to the interpretation of the referee. And my biggest issue with it, and I know this, I've said this a million times, is that the VAR has actually exacerbated the problem. Now that we have that, people are saying, VAR, every time, you've got to go to the VAR. And yet they're still not happy with what the VAR is doing because it's all still subjective. I still think, hand the control back to the referee. Sometimes he's going to give a pen that you're going to go, no, that's rubbish. I thought the same thing, to be honest. But we're never going to all agree on these decisions, are we?
The Mariners showed some fight. We can agree on that. Sam Graham, excellent. Jonathan Asprow, really good at the back as well.
All great three to of see them were. Clisby too.
Yeah, great to see him return from that knee injury and be so composed. So maybe the Mariners can avoid that wooden spoon and maybe Brisbane will end up on the bottom at the end of the season. There's something in terms of a narrative and something to look forward to at the bottom of the table in terms of that battle. They play each other this weekend, as you said. Melbourne City lost a game. They should have won yet again. It is a continuing theme for that football club, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, Newcastle honest, had the under-16s out there pretty much.
well, it wasn't quite that, but I know what you mean. I just that was a baffling performance for me on Friday night. You watched how Melbourne City, Robbie Slater said it during the call, people have said it in analysis afterwards. What are they trying to be? What is their pattern of play? I actually went to the post-game press conference and asked Warren Joyce about some of the changes that he made, because he put Delbridge at right back again. He's played there once before, and I remember him not being particularly flash there. I mean, he's 6 foot, what is he, 6 foot ten or something. I don't think he's a right back. Curtis Good played in defensive midfield last week. This week he was back at central defence. You know, Berengay looks lost out on the left. They just, I don't know. They chop and change every week. You look at their squad on paper and they've got so much talent. Mm. But they just, there's something missing, isn't there? They're so disjointed and don't seem to be able to string good results together. Whenever you feel as though they're getting a bit of momentum, and you just know what's going to happen this weekend in the Melbourne Derby, don't you? They're going to be absolutely brilliant. You just know it. And then the next week, they'll be back to, you know, 4.5 out of 10. There's something missing at Melbourne City. I don't know what it is, but it's Warren Joyce's job to find out.
I actually thought, you know, after... And he's done well, McLaren. That's what he's here for, to score goals. I thought probably a lot of people thought, well, that's it. We've got our striker and we're going to be winning games now automatically. But there's just so much more to it. I mean, I thought against the Jets that Joyce was outcoached by Merrick. Just his strategy was fantastic. Let's stay compact and hit them on the counter. Mm. But it's a mix of things as well. We can't just blame Joyce for these issues. I mean, there's no excuse for Riley McGree to lose the ball in a really bad area and get hit on the counter. That's where you, as a side, and especially players of this quality, you have to be composed in those situations. And no, we're in possession. We love to get a lot of width when we are on the ball. And no, as well, if I lose the ball here, we're in trouble, which they were. Mm. And great goals. Great calls. I mean, it's great to see teams actually win the ball and string a few passes again and hit teams on the counter-attack. And it's great to see Champions back.
Great substitutions by Ernie as well. Just at the right time, some of his players were obviously and understandably tiring after their exertions in the Champions League. To bring on Champness and O'Donovan in particular, those two, Champness a goal and an assist, you know, that really lifted them at the time where Melbourne City were obviously well on top.
Credit Newcastle. I mean, we speak about Melbourne City, and I was being flippant when I said the under-16s, but he had to turn things over because they've got a Champions League game and the most difficult of tasks against the reigning Asian Champions League champions in Kashima Antlers during the week. And look, they're up against it in that one. So they had to turn things over. To come out and win is a huge effort, and well done to Ernie Merrick and his team. And they're still alive in this finals race. It's only 6 points the difference now. They might still nab that spot.
And they've got Adelaide on Sunday.
That would be a huge achievement. And Wellington gained a point, I guess, because they played the Melbourne Victory. And what a crowd it was in Auckland. For all the people who say the A-League's dead, it was a bad week for them because the crowds were absolutely fantastic. Over 20,000 in Auckland. Great to see. That's what we want from that football club. And a confidence-building point, I guess, for Mark Rudin, whose status continues to grow. I mean, that was another big result for him. And it shows what he's doing in that country, that over 20,000 people turned out in Auckland to watch that.
And now they're off to Campbelltown. how do you go from Auckland to Campbelltown? I don't get it.
As a home game.
It's a home game, yeah. Mm. But clearly he's done a great job and they're playing really exciting football. Kachache has been tremendous this season. Singh has been playing extremely well. Krishna, Williams.
Philip Curto, you know, in goal.
Taylor at the back. Durante. And great balance to the side. And, you know, they're entertaining to watch.
He's got a settled side, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And interestingly, I read some of his quotes from a press conference he did last week where he was just ever so subtly putting out there, Roots, that he might not necessarily stay in Wellington if things are not, you know, put in place that he wants. Now, there's a lot of speculation he's been linked with the Western Melbourne
So he's planting the seeds.
I just found those comments interesting. I'm not saying one way or the other. I don't know. I haven't spoken to him about it. But that's the first sort of thing that you read and go, oh, that's interesting. Given he's done such a good job there, and obviously they love him over in Wellington for what he's transformed that club. But
he has a 2-year contract,
next year?
Is that right?
Yeah.
2-year contract?
But is he going to be there next year?
I think he'll be in Western Melbourne.
Yeah.
Just my hunch.
Yeah? I've
got
a hunch that might be the case as well.
I think they're signing too many players and too much.
You've obviously heard something, haven't you?
Oh, there's rumours going around.
Okay.
There's been no confirmation. I've asked people at the club, no comment.
Okay.
I think it'll happen. That's just my feeling, because there's so much happening at that club at the moment, signing players and assistant coaches. There's got to be someone making suggestions.
Yeah.
There just seems to be too much confidence with who they're recruiting. I think, and there's no denial from the Rudin camp at this stage. So it might be wrong. I hope for Wellington's sake it's wrong, but my hunch is that'll be the case. We'll have to wait.
Could we ask Rudes what he thinks about Risden as a player? Is he a fan? Or?
That might give it away. Coach of the year, Popovich or Rudin?
Popper. It has to be. Yeah, no disrespect to Rudes, but it has to be Popper.
Yeah. I mean, I think so as well. I actually put a poll up on Twitter on the weekend, and it was only 61% Popper, 39% Rudin. It wasn't completely overwhelming.
That's pretty comprehensive.
It's comprehensive, but I mean, there's a margin there that's not out of the water sort of stuff. And I agree that the margin, 9 points on top, it is clearly Popovich, but they're the only two candidates for mine for that honour right now. And in his first year, Mark Rudin, to do what he's done, to have them in the top six, to be getting these crowds, if the margin was 2 or 3 points at the top for Popper, it might be a legitimate debate. And he's done an incredible job, and he could go to that position if he does move from Wellington at the end of the season, as you know, a coach as well regarded as any in the competition. It's been an incredible debut season.
I mean, there's still a lot that can happen this season, but clearly Popper is the best coach so far, and not just his coaching, but I mean, Simon mentioned it before, it's having the ability to bring in the right players as well, and he's done that
and changing that mentality at Perth. You know, they had over Christmas that, you know, they had those 2-0 draws. And he said this, Popper, on several occasions, that they're not used to front running, you know, but they got over that wobble. Mm. They didn't lose. They didn't win, but they didn't lose.
Yeah.
So he's changed that mentality. And he said at the start of the season, when I came in, there was an atmosphere of hope. I want to change that into expectation. We expect to challenge. We expect to be going for silverware every season. And he seems to have done it.
The win over the Victory was a big landmark for them, and now they're on their way.
Twice they've beaten Victory.
Adelaide can't make that jump into being a contender. Sydney FC failed on the weekend as well in that regard to take advantage. But Adelaide just can't do it. Better signs, though, speaking of coaches, for Marcus Babbel. All of a sudden, two on the bounce. That whole debate about whether he's the man to take them into the new stadium might just be edging in his favour slightly.
Yeah, but I mean, you know,
Ned Zelich not convinced.
No, I'm convinced of his coaching ability. It's just that it took a while, didn't it, for them to find some defensive stability at the back, because they were really shocking.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's the man.
That was the biggest surprise for me. Like, and I mean, let's not forget the amount of brain explosions from players this season. Just terrible. And as a coach, I mean, we've seen, you know, many times sitting on the bench, just absolutely, you know, no reaction. He must have been thinking, what the hell am I doing here? What is going on? What are these players doing? So I think that's been the biggest challenge for him, just eliminating those individual errors, but also, you know, defensive structure and their discipline has been a lot better. And certainly attacking-wise, they've always given teams problems, haven't they? That they have the potential to score goals, but just finding that balance has been the biggest issue.
There's a common denominator, isn't there, with the bottom three teams, Brisbane, Wanderers, the Mariners, and that is being able to put 90 minutes together. They've all been competitive in patches in games, but haven't been able to see it through for the full 90 minutes. Now, we saw Brisbane do it last week against Sydney FC. We saw the Mariners do it against Sydney FC, albeit, you know, by the skin of their teeth, hanging on for a draw. And the Wanderers, I thought, were the best performers of the weekend, of those bottom three, quite obviously. Their defensive structure, for once, was solid, and they didn't concede, well, apart from the once. At the other end of the pitch, I think they've got real weapons. You know, Baum-Johan is now back fit. Riera scored. Bruce Kamau is a good weapon to have. And most importantly, Rolly Bonaventure has been transformed by Babbel. Remember, start of the season, he's a sloppy player. And everybody went, ooh, that's a bit harsh. Mm. You know, a coach talking about his own player. I think even Rolly was surprised by it. But he's changed his position once or twice. And now he looks one heck of a player. And there's talk, of course, that he might be at Perth this season.
Well, Wednesday podcast with Murray Harps and Speedy said that he's, you know, Popper wants him back. So that's going to be interesting. Abraham Ajok as well. Lovely goal from a young player. Yeah. Really good to see a finish like that from a young player coming through in Australia. Let's go overseas. FA Cup results. The big game hasn't been played yet. Manchester United,
it has.
Chelsea.
City Newport
County in front of 4.5 people and their goats in Newport. It was great to see.
I beg your pardon. And their goats. There's a lot of Welsh people who would be happy with
big
that.
Big favourites. Now, Simon.
For the quadruple, they're talking
Rotherham,
in City.
Burnley and Newport.
We've seen off all the big guns. The quadruple remains on.
It does remain on. Now, hopefully it won't happen in the Premier League. You can do what you like in the other competitions for mine. But
hey, a word about the Stockport Iniesta, Phil Foden. He is fantastic.
Yeah.
What a player he's going to be. Good for England as well.
Decent.
Just decent.
Decent.
Okay.
Good win by...
When are they selling him to a German club,
Simon? They're not. No, not Foden. Guardiola loves
him. No, he's very talented. Yeah. Good win by Man City. The big game to come, though, Man United-Chelsea is big because the influence it could have on United and where their confidence is at heading into the game that could well shape the title race, Man United-Liverpool, on Sunday night, which
what
is just
game.
Monumental.
Wow.
That's why this game
United
is so
said.
What time's that game on here?
It's a 1 a.m. kick-off in Australia. Oof. Yeah, so huge.
Perfect.
Hopefully Chelsea, I mean, Martial's already out, Lingard's out. Wouldn't mind a couple more injuries. But a big for Chelsea as well, and Sarri. I mean, you followed Sarri closely. I mean, there's talk he could be on the nose there at Chelsea.
I can't believe he's still there.
He needs a big result in this one, doesn't he?
He does, and he's capable of getting it. I mean, you know, clearly some of the things that he's said in the media has been a bit over the top, and it certainly did look like he was, you know, challenging Abramovich to basically sack him there for a couple of weeks. So still a lot of question marks, but a huge game. But the FA Cup, I mean, if you look at some of the teams that are left in there, I mean, how good is it, you know?
It's a bit more open this season, isn't it?
You know, Watford, Millwall still in there, Swansea, Wolves, fantastic. And now you've got the big guns now that are going to, you know, start knocking each other off. So... interesting.
A shame for Bailey Wright's Bristol City. They got knocked out. They're still in the top six, though, in the championship. Bailey's a chance to be playing Premier League football next season. I mean, they're in that playoff hunt. So great to see him back, and hopefully they can have a big charge now they're out of the FA Cup. Barcelona cruising ahead in Spain. I mean, it was such a tight title race, and in the space of a month, it's pretty much over. Sevilla were top of the table 2 months ago, and now they're like 18 points off the pace, I think. I mean, it's amazing how Barca have just cruised ahead. Real Madrid losing to Girona on the weekend.
A huge shock. But Barcelona this season play the most intelligent football that I've seen, not just in Spain, but the Champions League as well. For me, the best side by far. Mm. And you've got, obviously, Simon's looking at me. Yeah, Manchester City, yeah.
Are they the favourites for you in the Champions League? Because that is open as well.
Barca the favourites, clearly. Clearly. Simon?
We'll see. It's
Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, Liverpool, Bayern Munich's enormous this week. And Juventus, of course, are going to have a big say in things with Cristiano Ronaldo now. So,
and they're running away with the Serie A title, unfortunately.
Well, there's no surprise. Yeah. I
mean, well, it was close last season.
Yeah, and Napoli have dropped off now. And
big time. Hit the woodwork 18 times this season, Napoli, which is a record in the top five
Who
leagues.
Do you blame for that?
The woodwork.
The post.
Yeah, so...
is there a striker to blame for that? I mean, is there an issue in front of goal?
It's just really, if you look at the table, I mean, Juventus just too dominant, you know. They're just untouchable.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because last season was quite an interesting race.
It's become a little bit Celtic in Scotland, like in Italy. Like, it's a big concern. Juventus are just so far above the rest.
You know, this is the case. Everybody says, oh, this, you know, it's just in Scotland where it's wanted. Most countries in Europe are like this. Most countries. You look at even smaller nations like Norway, where Rosenborg have won how many titles out of the last, you know, probably 9 out of 10. Germany, Bayern Munich.
Dortmund are on
top.
Well,
it's different this season.
Dortmund this season. Okay, yeah. but that's a blip, isn't it, in terms of the general pattern. In France, you know, Paris Saint-Germain are now
PSG are a joke.
Up at the top. But everybody else goes, oh, the Premier League is so predictable. Are you kidding? The Premier League, actually five or even six teams theoretically could win it.
The Premier League is the most exciting league in the world for that reason. I mean, it is just so open between the top.
In terms of all the other competitions, I suppose you have to look at it now and say, is this going to be the way in perpetuity? I mean, it has been for many, many years in places like Holland. It's either Ajax or PSV or Feyenoord. and even Feyenoord had dropped away a little bit for many years. But most countries in the world are like that, you know? It's just the way it is, isn't it?
And here in Australia, it changes every season, and we love that, just about.
Well, it, you know, that might be different next year if the new independent A-League comes in and the salary cap is dropped. And, I mean, there are arguments for and against it. Personally, I am for the global standard because I think if we're going to compete internationally at club level as well as, in, you know, with the national teams, you have to follow global practice. And it's, I think it's incumbent upon our big clubs to get bigger. I don't know, everybody goes, oh, well, it's Sydney-Melbourne thing. Well, you know, that's the way football is around the world. I'm sorry. It's no good to keep dragging us back to the lowest common denominator. We've got to get our bigger clubs to be to achieve their potential, in my opinion.
I want to get your opinions on this one, right? Spurs-Dortmund. The night before the game, a hairdresser, a famous hairdresser, a guy called Sheldon Edwards, has rocked up at the airport, at the hotel, and five, six Dortmund players got a haircut. So the night before the game, right? So next day, they've lost 3-0. And now the media in Germany have absolutely blown up. So
really?
How the hell, you know, where's your focus? Where the preparation for such a big game? You've got a hairdresser coming in the hotel to snip away. Simon, what are your thoughts on that?
How does that impact upon your game?
Well look,
I mean, if they've been out
It does not impact on your game. But the discussion has been, why would you have a hairdresser just turning up the night before the game? Where is your focus? You know, can you not do this another time?
Did you ever have the hairdresser in your hotel?
Never.
Ned? What was your pre-game grooming routine then?
Well, the pre-game, usually, like, so we always just go to the hotel. It doesn't matter, home, away, always in the hotel. So really, you have dinner with the players, 7:30, 8 o'clock, have dinner. After that, just chill, play some cards, watch TV, just relax in the room. So really, nothing. Maybe go for a walk or something.
The current day player cares about what he looks like.
Did you care about what you looked like when you had a big game cameras on you? No, I didn't.
I think that's the key to it all.
Yeah,
it's a generational thing. You know, we're of a slightly different generation. This generation is, let's be honest, body obsessed. Looks obsessed, selfie obsessed, tattoo obsessed, hair obsessed. It's all about the image. That's the world we live in. Personally, I don't like it, but I'm older, you know, so it wasn't the way I grew up, but I suppose you have to make allowances for the fact that that's the way they think these days, and that is, rightly or wrongly, that's a priority for them. Getting a hairdresser.
They asked two Bundesliga coaches. So Christian Streich, who's at Freiburg, mid-50s, I believe, said no problem, no issue with it. They asked Friedhelm Funkel. He's
two good German names. Streich
62, 63. Basically said outrageous. Just would not have ever happened in our day.
Do you know what I love about that whole story, though, Ned? Is just the minutiae that the German media will go into to talk about football.
Yes.
Imagine that over here. No chance. Great stuff. Although we do talk about Ryan Grant's mullet, don't we?
Exactly. And he was brilliant on the weekend in giving it to Stephen Mallon from Central Coast for his forward mullet.
Yeah.
That was a great bit of banter on Sunday. You've kicked off the question segment beautifully, Ned Zelich. Love the segue, because let's get into the Twitter questions now. There are plenty of good ones. We'll read out some of the best from John O'Hurwitz for you, Ned. How much will your beloved Napoli miss Marek Hamšík, and how will they replace the club legend?
Well, obviously, sad to see him leave. He's been absolutely sensational for the club. But if you look at some of the players that Napoli have had to replace in the past, Cavani, Lavezzi,
Maradona.
No issue. They'll find someone to come in and replace him adequately.
Okay. From Dimitri Burundanis. How good is Elvis Kansoba? Can he become a key piece in the running for the victory? When full strength, Dimitri doesn't think he'll start, but he reckons he can become as good of a super sub in the league as anyone. How big of a say can he have in the running and come finals time?
A lot. I think it's been really, really good. And I think if there is one narrative that has emerged out of this A-League season, it is that you can dip into the NPL and find players who are not just going to be a bit part player in the A-League, but will really contribute. We've seen it with Kane Shepherd at Newcastle. We've seen it with Cam Soba. And we've seen it one or two other places. You know, Jordan Murray's contributed a bit for Central Coast Mariners
Kane
as well.
Kane Shepherd's been really good.
Yeah, I mentioned Kane.
Sorry.
So, you know, all those players, you can make that step up and have a big impact. And I think that's obviously exciting for the future of football in Australia.
I was reading Sam Jones's question while you were mentioning Kane Shepherd. He wants to know, bearing in mind Sydney's recent results, they've still got the victory and the glory at home in the run-in. Can they still snag a top two spot? Can you see them elevating themselves potentially, Ned?
Yeah, I would have thought that a couple of weeks ago, but the last two performances concerning, especially the way they lost against Brisbane Roar. So I still think that Melbourne Victory will be too strong in the end and end up getting second spot.
He's had to remodel things slightly with Gujenerjad coming in. I mean, it's still the same formation, but you know, they do play closer together than Lafonda has been a bit more isolated. It hasn't quite worked in the first two games of Gujenerjad coming to Sydney, has it? I mean, it's just taking some adjusting to.
Yeah, I mean, having said that, they did dominate the entire game pretty much against the Mariners, but they just couldn't finish. I think they lacked a little bit of creativity. Obviously, Ninkovic had some, you know, very nice touches in places, but they're missing probably a player like Sim De Jong, who might be back in the next couple of weeks. Just that little bit of artistry, perhaps, to open up defences. But I think Gujenerjad, in general, is a very, very good signing. And it gives them a lot of attacking depth, you know, particularly with Danny De Silva to come back as well because he wasn't available on Sunday.
Final question from Tyson. Absolutely nothing to do with football or potentially nothing to do with football. He wants to know what your favourite TV show is. Ned?
Pick it off. Favourite TV show? Wow.
All time or anything you're watching
now?
Wow.
Mate. To be honest, I don't watch too many TV shows these days.
What about over the years?
You only work in television.
I used to love watching Bewitched.
Really?
Yeah. Bewitched?
Bewitched.
Like 4 o'clock in the afternoon?
Gilligan's Island. What a show. I never miss that one. Family Ties as well.
That was good.
That was a good one.
Michael J. Fox as a youngster.
Yeah. So those three.
Simon, EastEnders?
Nah, not EastEnders. Corrie, mate, you know.
Coronation Street.
Coronation Street. Yeah, I used to watch Coronation Street. No, I would probably say, again, it's a historic one because I don't, a bit like Ned, don't tend to watch too many shows these days, but Match of the Day. That was your Saturday night staple with Desmond Lynham.
You know, there's still people in the UK. I got a mate whose father.
I thought we'd talk a non-sport.
Yeah,
we watch all the sports shows.
Of course,
yeah.
But while we're on the subject, I got a mate whose father won't find out the scores until Match of the Day comes on. So he'll block out his entire Saturday afternoon, and he'll watch Match of the Day as if he's finding out for the first time. In today's day and age, with every single gadget telling you the score by the second. Still keeps it old school.
I'll give you one non-sport program then, and you might not be aware of this one, but British listeners will be. Tiswas. Used to be on a Saturday morning. It was a kid's show, but there was an awful lot of innuendo for the adults. You know what I mean? It was very funny. Very, very witty.
I'll go with Entourage as my favourite all-time TV show.
Good one.
And I actually started watching season one the other day because it's just so good. I started it again. It's on Foxtel. You can watch it through the on-demand stuff
good show.
And the rest. That's
good
a nice
show. I never got around to watching the film.
Film's good. You need a couple watches of it. At first, you like it's a bit disappointing.
Yeah.
You watch it again, you go, actually, no, this is all right. There's a bit in there.
It's like an Iron Maiden album, Ned.
Oof.
Yeah. Listen first time, you go, eh. By the fifth time, yeah.
Grows on you.
Oh, what a show. Ari Gold, how good.
Legend.
The greatest, huh? Ned, love your work. You're a legend.
Thanks,
as well.
Guys.
Thanks for joining us on the Fox Football Podcast. You're on the A-League Hour tonight. Make sure you catch that Monday night or during the week when it's replayed. Big weekend of football coming up. Murray. Andy Harper, Brenton Speed, back with the Football Podcast on Wednesday. Make sure you catch that as well. Thanks for your time on the Fox Football Podcast for this week on Monday.